Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is Reina Sinnegar, the author of Persian Food from the Non-Persian Bride. We will be discussing with her how she came about to write this book and the melding of two very disparate cultures. Good evening, Reina.
A little bit about your background and how you came into Persian food.
So I was born in Venezuela, in the beautiful city of Caracas, and I never met a Persian person in my life until I ended up working as an international student in UCLA in a little Taco Bell Express on campus. And there came along a very unsatisfied customer who wanted two bean burritos without cheese. And unfortunately, I messed up in the order, gave him one with cheese, and he was very upset, came back to complain, and to make a very long story short, that man became my husband. So that's how, and he was a Persian. He was a Persian, and that's how I ended up being exposed to Persian culture and Persian life. And then basically, after we got married, the moment he proposed, he said, you know, I want you to understand that, yes, we met at a Taco Bell, but the truth is that I can't live without Persian food. So I had to learn how to make the food, and that's how I made the cookbook.
From Taco Bell all the way to high Persian cuisine. Wow. So tell us a little bit about your background before you actually became the non-Persian bride. You grew up in Caracas.
I grew up in Caracas, and I grew up very religious, very, very spiritual. It was just a little problem, but it was the wrong religion. I grew up Catholic. I grew up going to Catholic school my whole life. And it was a wonderful upbringing. I always give a disclaimer every time I talk about it because they really, all through life, the people that made a big difference in our lives, we always have to be thankful for everything they've done in our lives. But I was a very inquisitive child, and that got me in a lot of trouble because it's not the best thing to do at a Catholic school to ask a lot of questions. And I was always, turned back with the questions. And that, became very difficult for me. I wanted a lot of answers. I was searching for, I don't know what I was searching for, but something else. And then around the age of 12, I was told by one of my aunts on my father's side that our family were Marano Jews from Spain. And then my family was actually really weird, and that answered so many of the questions that I had about why our family was so peculiar. And it was because basically we had all these customs that came along with being Jewish and from a long, long time ago. So I decided to become a Jew. And I started around 15 years old, and I finished when I was about 20. So it took a long time, but it was worth it. Mm-hmm. It was the most important thing I've done in my life, for sure. Even more important than the cookbook.
So that brings up another question. In the cookbook, you say that towards the end in The Laws of Tarfos, you said that your conscience speaks to you in Yiddish. How is that possible then?
My neshama speaks to me in Yiddish.
Why Yiddish? If anything, it should have been either Spanish or in Persian.
I'll tell you what. That's true. I tell you what. First of all, I found out my family was really of Jewish roots. They came from Jews. I found out that the last names in the family were Perez with an S, like Shimon Perez. And also, mm-hmm. We had a family with the name of Goldberg, which was really Ashkenazi. So it happens a lot of Jews in Spain not only left through the south to go to the Americas, but they also went east towards Italy. And that's actually how Italy got risotto, because the Marano Jews brought rice to Italy with them, because rice is a very important part of the diet. And then that rice became risotto in Italy. And then they also went to other areas and they became Ashkenazi. So I really do feel that I have a little bit of an Ashkenazi heart to myself. And also because when I did my conversion, I really learned everything Ashkenazi. My bedding was an Ashkenazi bedding. And, I was enamored with gefilte fish. I actually do love gefilte fish. I love kugel. I would never serve it to my husband. He thinks it's kryptonite. But I actually love it.
Well, some versions of gefilte fish are.
I'm sorry?
I said that some versions of gefilte fish, or what passes as gefilte fish, is definitely poison food, and I'm an Ashkenazi.
The one in the jar, right? But the
right.
truth is, that's how I think that, because my Yiddish guy like grew up in I grew up like an Ashkenazi girl, in the sense that I, even today when I do Birkat on the phone, it's so difficult for me to do it this Friday way, because when I was growing as a Jew, I was growing Ashkenazi. So it was very hard to make that switch, marrying somebody Persian. And I mean, I still find it to be difficult when it comes down to liturgy, because I just, when I pray, I really do feel that I pray Ashkenazi. And when I say brachot, it'll come out Ashkenazi. And, you know, you can't say pushka, or like, you can't, there's some Ashkenazi words like shvitzin and stuff. Like, I just can't, there's no other word in any other language that I like, Meshugana. This is a very treasured word for me. I can't give it up, you know.
That is funny. Okay. So how many years have you been married, Ad Mea Veshrim?
I've been married, Baruch Hashem, thank God, for 13 and a half years.
Okay. Yeah. And can you tell us a little bit about this cookbook, the cookbook and its birth pangs?
Pregnancy is a cookbook. It literally felt like that, because I gained like 30 pounds while I was making it, because the food is so good. Well, they're pretty much my mother-in-law recipes. What happened was that when I moved to New York from Los Angeles, which is where my husband is from, and when he moved to New York, and I moved to New York to go to school as well. And when I moved to New York, his mother realized that it would be a huge investment for me to learn how to make Persian food, so that way she wouldn't have to make Persian food, freeze it, and FedEx it to him to New York. Because you won't believe this, but this is what's happening right now. There is a black market of Persian food, frozen Persian food, flying from Los Angeles to wherever there is a Persian kid in any of the colleges on the East Coast, and vice versa, by their mom making food to them and shipping it. I'm not even joking. So she's like, oh my gosh, you know how much money I would save on FedEx if I teach this girl to make Persian food and she'll make food for my son? So I was like a happy camper. I was like, okay, for sure I learned. I like the food, you know. I was like, sure, I learned for him. I'm like, I'll learn for myself. This is good stuff. So I had to put, you know how, like, and I'm sure you're very familiar with situations like this. I mean, anybody has a mommy, a bubby, a wife, a sister. The cooks, best cooks out there don't measure anything. They just put a fistful of this, a pinch of that. Right? So that was the same thing. My mother-in-law didn't measure anything. But for me, that I didn't grow up, you know, in a Persian kitchen, I didn't know necessarily what things were, you know, going to taste like, and how much of this, how much of that. The ingredients are pretty quite exotic. There's ingredients out there that are not necessarily at all Latin American ingredients, which is what I'm used to. So I had to really put it all in writing. And also for my Ashkenazi friends, as I grew older and I was already married, they all really wanted to learn all these recipes, because they just felt that it was a little different, and they wanted a break from the gefilte on the kugel, and they just wanted to make Persian rice. And all of them wanted the recipes, but they're all brought up in America, and they all wanted to have exact measurements. So I wrote the book for them. And then after Hashem, after God blessed me with five boys, Kanayanahara, poo, 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 poo. I was like, Beliainara, I realized, I said, holy cow, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Am I going to have to teach five daughters-in-law to do this? There's no way. I'm like, this is the worst thing that ever happened to me. I was like, not because I'm like, I just don't have the patience my mother-in-law had. God bless her. Like, she had so much patience with me. I'm like, I don't think I'll have patience with my daughter-in-law. So I decided to make this book for them also. And, you know, I my oldest is only 10 years old, but I thought this was going to be, you know, a labor of love that would take 10 years. I would take all my time, do this and do that. But all of a sudden, you know, Minish Amayim, like, it's just God has his ways. And it worked out that it became published. But it's a very personal cookbook if you look at it. Is my very most personal stories about growing up as an outsider, really, that grew up in an Ashkenazi way and coming into this very Sephardi, completely different mentality, and the cultural shock, the funny relationship between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, the funny anecdotes. It's just a really hilarious book. It was a lot of fun to write.
Okay. You said that the recipes that you have are recipes that were given to you by your mother-in-law. However, there's at least one recipe where the photography is superb, which And that is the case throughout your whole book, by the way. Not only is the photography superb, but it's not even a Persian recipe. And it happens to be the recipe that I specifically used when I posted about this yesterday. I was intrigued by the fact that it is not a Persian recipe at all. But it, as you say, it definitely sounds very, very Persian.
Yeah, it's a very beloved. I mean, there are definitely non-Persian recipes. The subtitle of the book, the name of the book is Persian Food from a Non-Persian Bride. And the subtitle is Other Sephardic Recipes You Would Love. So there are certainly other Sephardic recipes. Persians don't have enough salads in their array of recipes to be able to make it into a whole chapter. So I had to add a lot of salads from the Middle East.
And you have quite a few Moroccan recipes, I noticed.
A few Moroccan recipes. I love Moroccan food.
Moroccan, yes.
And I have so many good Moroccan friends that are just such a happy sharing group that wanted to share it. And I think that it's one of the jewels of the Sephardic cuisine. But this particular recipe you're talking about, it actually came about one of my wedding anniversaries. I love, there is a beautiful, beautiful novel called Like Water for Chocolate. In Spanish, it's Como Agua para el Chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Para Agua para el Chocolate, sí.
I'm sure you know which one I'm talking about. It was written by this fantastic author, Laura Esquivel. And she is a fantastic novel with things that are completely extraordinary. It is a beautiful romantic story. And in this novel, there is a beautiful Cornish hen served with rose petals. And I always loved very much this recipe, and I wanted to make it in a Persian way to basically integrate my heritage with my husband's heritage and have it in a dinner, anniversary dinner for us. And that's really where this recipe came out. It was really a labor of love for me. I put it together for him. And I put, for me, this recipe is a beautiful memory from my childhood, you know, reading this novel. And at the same time, I wanted to use Persian things like, for example, rose water in it. And I wanted to use quince. You also can, you know, incorporate all the different things if you don't have this available, but I often use rose water in it, and I also use quince preserves, which is really, really Persian. And that's how it came up, and it's unbelievable. And I love Cornish hens. They're so elegant. They're so petite and beautiful, beautiful for Sheva Brachot, beautiful for anything really just fancy and special, like a special, beautiful dinner.
I remember the first time I ever tasted something that was done with rose water was at a mixed marriage Hatuna. He was Persian, she was Ashkenazi, at the Waldorf Astoria.
Wow.
And there they served meat. I believe it was lamb, if I remember right. And the aroma was incredible with the rose water.
Right.
And here you have Cornish hens garnished with roses. It's absolutely beautiful. I have never seen that done. It's incredible. When I saw that photo, I figured that's it. That's the recipe I have to, you know,
copy over. It's a very beautiful, beautiful dish. It's a gorgeous dish. Even Persians think I got it from like an antique Persian cookbook because they feel like it's such a Persian. How could they not ever have tasted it before? And I tell them it's made up. I just made it up.
So I take it that next you will probably be working on a book on South American food.
That's exactly true. Am I right now actually already working on a cookbook for South American? My mom was actually so happy, and my mom was like, "What is this? You come up with her recipes? How about my recipes?" I'm like, oh, I have to make my mom happy too. So I am already working on a wonderful cookbook of South American dishes, mostly South American because I am not Central American, and even mostly a Venezuelan because, to be honest with you, each country has such a vast array of recipes. It would be impossible to make.
Well, as a South American, you're close enough to Central America, much closer than I as a Uruguayan.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very true. But as it is in Venezuela alone, I mean, I have already like thousands of recipes. I don't even know how to narrow it down because we have so many beautiful things in South America in general that call for amazing things, especially arepas, empanadas, things that are, you know, completely native. That the truth is, and that I also would have some Spanish recipes because in my family, in Venezuela at least, we have a lot of Spanish influence in our cooking and Italian influence and French influence. So basically the European version of, it's like a Latin American married to a European. It's a very beautiful beautiful array of recipes. And the photography is going to be also incredibly stunning because I already have some pictures. And things like kosher paella and beautiful things that I really make at home, mostly for myself because my husband is really a hardcore Persian. Like, he won't touch any other stuff. But right now, for example, I made hallacas, which is like a Venezuelan tamal. And it's just really, really yummy and different, extremely different. Yeah.
While you were learning to cook Persian cuisine, I am sure there may have been many a funny incident here and there. Care to tell us about it?
Well, there was one time where I took a few culinary lessons, culinary cooking lessons for this particular cookbook. And we have really good culinary schools in Boston. And I took a few classes here and there for the pretty much the basic things. I did not become a chef, which is really you have to go to school for. But while I was taking the lessons, you learn really basic things of like knife work and all that. And I was chopping onion one day, and my father-in-law was actually visiting. My father-in-law and my mother-in-law visiting from Los Angeles. As I'm chopping onions, my father-in-law is like, "Oh my gosh!" He screams, and I literally thought, like, "What did I do wrong? Like, what's going on?" And he starts screaming for my mother-in-law in Farsi. Shala, shala, bianja bivinam, bia. Like, he's saying in Farsi, "Come here, look at this, look at this." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I must have done something really atrocious or really good. I don't know. I don't know yet." So my mother-in-law comes. She looks at my onions that are cut very small, the dice, very, very small, very small dice. And then she looks at me and she looks up, and my father-in-law looks at me. He's like, "Oh, after 13 years of marriage, you're finally able to marry our son because your onions are so little." Because in Persian, by Persians, you have to be able to chop vegetables in a very tiny way to make Shirazi salad, which is nothing than Israeli salad with a different name. It's the same thing. But the smaller your vegetables, the more, upper part you are to marry somebody Persian, the better candidate you are as a Persian wife. So he was coming along and he was saying, "Oh my gosh, oh, this is great. This book finally paid off for you to be able to marry our son." And it's like, okay, we've married for 13 years.
It's one of those, so it took you 13 years to become full-fledged, huh?
Yeah, I was like, finally, now I'm welcome in the family. So, yeah.
Anything else that maybe an interesting story or a funny story connected to this book?
Well, an interesting story to see how God goes around and around. It's just really crazy. I really wrote this book as a very personal person. I really thought about printing 20 copies of the book, giving it to my friends and giving them, one to my mom, my mother-in-law, my future daughters-in-law. And I was working on it really hard. I was on a trip to Morocco, actually, with Rabbi Pesach Kron. This must have been like 3 years ago, when Marita Sakran went to Morocco, Gibraltar, and Spain. And I was sitting in a bus, and this bus full of New Yorkers and Jews, you know, it's a big, big tour. And I'm working on my laptop on the PDFs, the beautiful PDFs my good friend, who is a designer, made for me, and I'm going over them. And then this girl, you know, when you can see, when you're sitting in an airplane or on a bus, you can see through between the cracks of the chair, you can see what other person is doing in front of you. She sees what I'm doing, and she turns around. She's like, "I'm sorry, like, what are you doing? What you're looking at is very beautiful." And I said to her, "Oh, well, I wrote this cookbook, for my future daughters-in-law and all." And she said, "Well, it's so pretty. Let me see it." And I start showing it to her, and she's like, "Well, you should publish this." And I said to her, "That's impossible. First of all, it's extremely personal. Like, this is a very personal anecdote and all. And second of all, it's like, it's impossible to find a publisher. Do you know how difficult it is?" And she looks at me and she says, "Not when your uncle is Feldheim." So that's how it came about that my cookbook became published by Feldheim. So it's really Min HaShamayim that you happen to be in the right place at the right time. And then she's blessed
me. Well, as a matter of fact, they did a beautiful production of this book. In fact, they've done quite a few cookbooks, and they're all very beautifully produced. But yours is one of the best. And what I especially like is the photography. There is a mysterious air about almost every photograph, because of the background, and, you know, it's almost like you want to find out more. What is going on here? Not just do I want to eat it, but I want to find out what's behind it.
I really thank you. It was my amazing, amazing, talented friend, Marina Karasalis. She's actually Greek, and she wanted, we were coming up with the concept of the photography, and she said, you know, Persian is a lot of, it's surrounded by mysteriousness. It's surrounded by, you know, the veils and all these things. And she's like, I want to make sure the photography, she's a beautiful, incredible photographer. And she said, I want to make it very dark and intense and, you know, the contrast of colors vibrant, but yet like really, really dark and intense. And because she literally, her concept is exactly what you're describing right now. She wanted to say, I want people to want more of what's in there, what's in that shadow, what's in the hidden part of the world.
Right, and what I especially like, what I especially like is, and I have quite a few very beautiful cookbooks with fantastic photography, but what I especially like about yours is the extreme close-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are there extreme close-ups, there is also a lot of detail, so it's almost like I want to reach into the photograph to grab a piece.
Leak it. I know. She did an incredible job. She's so incredibly talented. I'm very
like,
good.
For example, I'm looking on page 59 at the Libyan butternut squash salad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at that photograph. How can you look at that without trying to reach in?
Yeah, she's very talented. She really is. And also all the gadgets and stuff are very uniquely Persian and very authentic. That's what I like. I make sure that this book really reflected the culture and the beautiful heritage of Persian Jews have.
Well, I have some Persian friends. I've eaten at their house on many a Friday evening. There are some Persian restaurants in Teaneck, New Jersey, which is not too far away from here. And I've been there quite often, and I even spoke about them in my blog. And I can tell you that reading this book just reminded me of all those wonderful meals I've had both by my friends and at Royal Persian in Teaneck. It's almost like
thank you so much. You
were there telling them what to do.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk a little bit about that last part of your book, The Laws of Tarof and Other Persian Peculiarities. Tell us a little bit about that. And the reason I'm asking that is because as I'm reading that, it is quite obvious that on the one hand you regard it as funny, on the other hand it's very, very obvious you absolutely love every single one of those peculiarities.
I do. I bask in the beauty of the culture. I think so. Tarof is an art that Persian, actually many other cultures do it. Persians do think that they have the copyright on tarof, but to make a very long story short, tarof is an art of creating an atmosphere of self-restriction, but yet make it into something that's very admirable, to be able to control yourself. And it's actually a very Jewish concept of self-control. And what it comes across as, what you see when you look at two people's tarofing is when you see somebody offering, for example, I don't know, a cup of water, and then the other person says, no, thank you, it's okay, you know, it's all right, I don't want to bother you, because you really generally don't want to bother the other person. And the other person says, no, please, you should have the water. And then the other person, no, thank you, it's okay, really, I'm all right, but they really do want the water. And then that goes on and on for like maybe like two or three times, and then finally the host gives in and just gives the water. It's really a game. It's a beautiful thing, and some people do take advantage of it, and then incredibly enough, like culturally, that's where you kind of become lost, because if you go to a Persian household, a very traditional Persian household, and you are offered a cup of tea and you immediately say yes, you come across as impolite because you didn't tarof, you didn't say no, thank you, I don't want to impose, and it's part of really the etiquette. Part of the culture, and it's actually very common in other cultures as well. I mean, in Latin American culture, it's also part of the etiquette to not immediately say, well, yes, I have it, you know, I'm starving, give me a plate of food. You know, you also, you know, have decorum, and with decorum, you just really, in a very gentle way, you kind of, you know that they know you're hungry, but you don't want to come across as like this, you know, starving person.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Having grown up,
we have all done it.
Of course. Having grown up in Uruguay with European parents, it never occurred to me that I would ever eat a chicken with my hands instead of with a knife and fork. When I came to the States, all of a sudden, all my friends were laughing at me. What are you doing? It's a chicken, for God's sake. What are you doing with a knife and fork? It took me...
I know, that's another thing.
About 30 years
really
in the States before I started eating it with my fingers. And every time I do that, I see my mother's face in front of me and I feel very guilty.
I know. So the Persians actually don't mean, I mean, I'm repeating myself and saying that this is, I don't want to generalize because there's certainly Persians out there that use knives, but a lot of Persians don't use knives at all because the food is made in a certain way that you can cut it with a spoon. It's so soft, it's so tender, it's so juicy. The kebab is already cut up for you, it's grounded. So it's the meat of a knife, it's really almost non-existent. So for Persians, it's a fork and a spoon. And for me, again, we come from similar cultures, both South American. You don't, and for me, at least, I went to finishing school. I went to private Catholic school where, like, decorum and you know, finishing school and etiquette school was extremely important. We even have a manual. I was given a manual as a child on how I should behave and how I should speak. It's called the Manual de Carreño. We have it in Venezuela. Older ladies get a manual like that, and we all have to follow this manual. And for me, when I don't see a knife and a fork and a table well appointed, I get really stressed out. I'm like, what is going on here? Where's the knife? And they eat with a spoon and fork. For me, it's like barbaric. And I see myself today happily eating with a spoon and a knife. And then when my mom is around, I certainly change it to a spoon and a fork. And when my mom is not around, I change it to a knife because I know my mom is going to like... Ah, she'll be like, what are you doing? What have I taught you your whole life? But, yeah, that's the story with that.
And we are just about out of time. Why don't you tell us about your blog and your website?
So the blog is really, it's lots of fun for me. It's really where I get in touch with the fans and with the people who enjoy Persian food. I share tips. Actually, soon I'm going to write a whole blog about Persian utensils and all the really cool gadgets Persians use. I really share a lot of recipes, especially depending on the holiday. I have a lot of personal pictures and family pictures and pictures of events that I do. And it's really a great way to connect with my fans. I also have a Facebook page and Twitter. And in my Facebook page, there's a lot more of a dialogue with the fans, and it's a much more of a dialogue with the people who love Persian culture and love Persian cuisine in general. And my website is really a place where people can listen to Persian music and they can see beautiful pictures of the cookbook. They can reach out to the most, you know, important recipes that a person should know. They could see videos. I have a ton of YouTube videos. Even I have Tadig troubleshooting videos. Tadig is the crusty bottom of the rice. And I have videos on almost like everything that you can imagine of my recipes and stuff. And it's really lots and lots and lots of fun. I also have a video of challah making that is really great for anyone who doesn't know how to make any challah whatsoever and people who already know how to make challah to get really great tips on how to braid challah and all that. So it's really
one of the hardest things about making challah that most people complain about is the braiding, and I watched your video on your blog, and you made it sound very, very easy. With almost step-by-step instructions.
You can stop it in the middle. The thing is that you can stop it. You can bring your laptop, or you can have your iPad in the kitchen. You can stop
right,
it. Right,
exactly.
You can rewind it. You can take your time to learn it. Not embarrassing, and you know, it's not embarrassing. You're right there with your laptop and yourself in the kitchen privately. So it's really easy, and the challah is really, really good. Thank God, it's really lots of fun.
Okay. And we're just about out of time. I want to thank you. This has
thank
been a lot of fun,
me.
And I would certainly like to do it again sometime in the short future. Thank you very, very much. Good night,
thank
one and
so
all. And please, my pleasure. And I know that the audience loved it because I have received already quite a few emails. Thank you very much for being with us. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Please tune us in next week again at the same Black Talk Radio station, blacktalkradio.com/kosherscene. Thank you very much. Good night, one and all.